everybody. Welcome to our show. I'm Liz.
And I'm Taylor. This is a podcast for and about the town we love.
And now we're talking Darien.
Hello and welcome. Today is August 20th, 2023, and we are lucky enough to have with us tonight John and Joe Vaccaro of the V20 Group. It's a father-son duo in commercial real estate development, and they are currently working on the project next to Palmer's supermarket called Heights Crossing. I think everyone is eager to know what's going on with that. These two gentlemen were both Wall Street executives before starting in this industry and have been working in Darien for about 10 years. They live here. Joe grew up here, and it's a really unique father-son team that is doing great things in this town. I can't wait to hear more about it after it has been, you know, pretty dormant for a while. But yeah. Once these guys picked up the project, they closed on March 1st of 2023. And by March 8th, 1 week later, the shovel was in the ground and they were starting demo. That's pretty awesome.
It is pretty awesome. And before you go any further and like recap what they're going to hear in this episode, Taylor, let me just set up some vocabulary for this episode because it gets a little confusing. We have three large commercial projects going on right now in Darien. This project, Heights Crossing, is just one of those. So it's important actually for me to tell you guys these two other projects, remind you of those. So you're not confused by the vocabulary. The first one is the Corburn Project, run by our beloved David Genovese, who we've had on this podcast. That's located in downtown Darien in the CBD. It's known as the Central Business District. It's along the Post Road. It's where the Darien train station is and places like 1020 and the Goose. The second project that we're going to refer to here is also on Heights Road, right next to where the Vaccaros are developing. And that is done by Federal Realty Group. They're a national brand, and they've done a tremendous job building out an area there called Darien Commons. It's where you have the Equinox, the Walgreens, Seymour's, Gregory's Coffees, and we've also had them on our episode. So just so you guys know, three projects. This one we're focusing on the...
Yeah, that's good to clarify.
Yeah.
So in this episode, we'll cover the state of development in Darien. We'll go over some of the projects that this pair has worked on already in town because they've been in business for 10 years. They've done a number of other high profile projects in Darien, discuss some of the concerns and challenges that have come with this project, discuss their retail clients and who may be coming in, and just generally about this experience so far. I look forward to this.
I do too. And then before we bring that to you, one quick shout out to our sponsor. Taylor, give it to us.
Yes, Liz, thank you. Our sponsor today is Riley Volvo Cars of Stamford. I can't say enough about these guys. They're good personal friends of ours. You can't find someone better to sell you a car. Don't fret anymore about buying a new or used car. Just feel good about the fact that you have the Riley family in town and they run this operation in Stamford right over the line. There's no haggling. There's full transparency. They are fully family owned and operated for many, many generations. They are so pleasant to deal with. Please head down to Riley Volvo Cars. The cars are fantastic too. I mean, my family has been driving Volvos for generations. Can't say enough about them. Right. So,
Taylor, done brilliantly. And now bring them on, the father-son duo, John and Joe Vaccaro of the V20 Group. Guys, it's such a pleasure to have you here. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. You know, Taylor and I have wanted to have you on for, you know, a good part of a year. Yeah, forever. That's what else. We had David Genovese, one of our first guests, and people loved his podcast because everyone wanted to know what's going on downtown. And now we've got the guys who are working on Heights Road. And you guys are doing the Heights Crossing. Is that what it is?
Yes.
Okay.
AKA the Palmer's Project, right?
Yeah.
Or so, is that a bad nickname?
Maybe former Palmer's Project.
Former Palmer's Project.
Well, at the Palmer's supermarket location.
Correct. Yeah, let's identify the location. It's the intersection of Heights Road, Hollow Tree Ridge, like northeast corner. Is that right?
That's right.
Great.
Okay.
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
So I have lived in Darien now 10 years. We've had family here for over 20 years. And since I knew the name Darien, we've been hearing about projects being developed on Heights Road. I'm talking 20 years. Like, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. And then 10 years ago, I moved here. It's coming, it's coming. And 5 years ago, this thing got kind of demolished, about 5 years. And I was losing my mind for the last 5 years as this thing sat and rotted and just picked up bugs and whatever else over there. So I'm dying to know what is going in here. We all are dying to know. What is it?
Well, it's a mixed-use project.
Okay.
It'll be about 30,000 square feet of retail and 65 apartments. We're doing something a little bit different than Darien Commons, which is basically about 120 some apartments and about maybe 100,000 square feet of retail. What The biggest difference is ours is a little bit more New England in style, even though theirs is too, but it's all connected by skyways and whatnot in terms of the second and third floor.
Yours is?
Yes.
Okay.
And so it has this New England charm to it, but it also, I mean, if you put it in Europe someplace, it would probably fit in almost an Austrian sort of setting, but you'd clad the building differently. But it's pretty unique in terms of the way it's going to look. In addition,
is there anywhere to see that? By the way, I haven't found any renderings or sketches.
It should all be online at this point, because all the approved P&Z stuff is at this point on posted.
But not on your site, right?
Actually, we do have some pictures on our website as well.
What
some renderings of what it will look like. Yes.
Okay, and your website is
v20group.com.
Okay, thanks. Yep. Sorry to interrupt.
So, but by the way, and when you talk about the Darien, what was the other project you mentioned? The federal project. What is it?
Darien Commons.
I want to make sure people know Darien Commons is right next door to you guys. It's the brand new giant buildings, huge development on Heights Road.
Yeah. Right across from the Norton train station.
Yes.
Yeah. So one of the things that probably makes some sense to just talk a little bit about in terms of Norton Heights, first of all, the between what happened at Darien Commons, which is on about 7 acres, and what we're doing on 4 acres, and these things have, as you said, they've been on the drawing boards for a very, very long time. But what you're creating is a second central business district.
Yeah.
And so you have the train station, obviously, and you also have the turnpike, which is 2 blocks away or 3 blocks away, however you want to measure it. And so what you've introduced that never was there before is an area of commerce. And so you'll have... Okay, as simple as the Palmer's grocery store, a post office, 4 banks, a couple of gyms. You'll have the Equinox, which is another anchor. You'll have brand new Walgreens. In addition, we're bringing in a Goddard School, which is going to take up about 40% of our retail. So that'll be a preschool, which, you know, there are preschools in town, but there's nothing that's 12 months out of the year, and there's nothing that's that close to the train station. So,
and the notion of a preschool is a little bit of a misnomer, because they take kids up to pre-K, but they also take kids as old as 6 weeks old. So for the working parents, it certainly fulfills a need.
We don't have that in Darien either.
Yeah, can we dive into that for 1 second? Like, I saw in your line that it was up to 152 kids.
Correct.
That's and big.
It's Goddard School.
Right. Yeah. And it's Goddard, just by way of background, is a franchise. There's about 600 of them across the country. The folks that own this one also own the one in Westport. They couldn't have opened up Westport at a worse time, because it's right at the beginning of the pandemic. Oh. And they're full with it's the same size, 150 kids, with 150 kids on the waiting list. So it's a very successful concept. The reason it's called the school is because they actually do things like read to the kids, and they do things to try to educate children, even as young as 6 weeks. It is a 12-month program, and it's full-time. So
wow.
We have other preschools in town. They're generally through various churches. They're usually 9 months or in duration, you know,
or less,
right? And they're generally half-day programs. So... this is very different. So for the working parents that, you know, mom and dad both work,
yeah,
this actually, huge. You know, fits the bill.
So is Goddard your anchor tenant there?
Goddard, for that site, it absolutely is an anchor tenant. And I think that combined with Palmer's and the train station across the street kind of make up your three. The other thing that's interesting about this site is, as my dad just mentioned, it's only on 4 acres. And about an acre of that is currently the Palmer's parking lot. That parking lot's not going away. It's still a parking lot, and we'll have to resurface it and make it look a little bit nicer. And that's part of our approvals that we receive from the town. But when you actually think about the actual buildings, it's only on 3 acres. So it's a lot smaller of a site when you compare it to Federal's project or to what's going on in downtown Darien.
So the property you're developing goes right up to the Palmer's building?
No, it actually, currently, if you were to drive through there right now, you'd see a fence line. It's that fence line. The actual parking lot for where, you know, you shop and park for going to the grocery store, that stays the same. The parking lot is going to be...
Right, I get it, you're going to keep it, but that's part of your property.
100%.
Doesn't own their own parking lot?
No.
Oh, wow.
So we have a shared parking agreement with them, so they'll be able to use it, and it'll be... For all intents and purposes, it'll operate the same way it always has. Obviously, Joe mentioned it, that'll all be resurfaced, re-landscaped. It's going to look, you know, new lighting, new everything. It'll look pretty nice. Right now, that parking lot's kind of in bad shape.
But is that the only parking for both Palmer's and your development?
No, okay. No. We did put in structured parking. The first level is for retail parking. We added roughly a total of about 110 parking places. But the second floor parking will be for the residential tenants. And then the third floor above is actually some high-end apartments, which we'll talk about in a second. But more importantly, when you think about this, you know, structured parking, the distance between the ground floor and the second floor is 14 feet. So you can actually drive a fire truck through there, or any kind of truck, really, for that matter. And so it has more of an open feeling to it, and you're not going to feel claustrophobic. It has light and air on three sides, so it has more of a open air feel to it.
Yeah, we tried to when we took a step back and really thought about the design for the project, and the first thing that we were thinking about was making sure that we had adequate parking for any retail, any whether it be Palmer's retail or our retail that'll end up moving in,
or restaurants
and restaurants as well. So we wanted to make sure we had enough open parking spaces. There's about 385 parking spaces that we have planned for this overall site.
In combination with what's there already in the...
Correct.
Okay.
Where on the site is the raised parking garage going to go?
It's in the back of the site.
Along that big hill.
Sure. Very close to the big hill. Basically where Jimmy's restaurant used to be, kind of in that area.
Will you make it look nice? Are we going
to... Well, thanks to Liz and the ARB in town, yes, we are.
Nice job, Liz.
So we were inspired by sort of an equestrian look. So we looked at Fox Ridge. I'm trying to think of
that. We looked at the farm over
Oxridge.
Oxridge. Okay. And then we also looked at...
their barn, the Oxridge barn. Yeah.
Right.
And then we also looked at
Ziegler's.
The Ziegler estate where the old barn sits. And we tried to kind of give it like a little bit of an equestrian look on the front of the building. Huh. Just because you are in the country. We wanted to make it kind of blend in, like a parking barn per se.
Yeah, it'll have barn doors that are just for decoration. And there's lanterns that look very country and whatnot just for decoration.
Right, because I will say, you know, like, since you mentioned the ARB, I've never said that, but I sit on the ARB, and one of the concerns, like, this our board had, I think people have in general, is a giant parking structure in the middle of, like, a pedestrian-focused walking development. I mean, it's not a great thing. In a perfect world, you would not have that parking structure there. There would just be the parking where Palmer's is.
Correct.
Like, did you have to do that? Like, it's kind of annoying.
Yeah, so when you think about it... A lot of people, if you take a step back and think about the world today, people don't want to drive in and go underground parking. There's a couple issues from a developer standpoint. You know, there's a safety issue. There's a cost issue.
Really costly to go under.
It's very costly to go underground. And then on top of it, we sit there and we take a step back. How do you make it open, and how do you make it feel like people can spread out and go to the various retailers or restaurants or whatever you have you? And the best way to do that is to have surface parking. You know, Federal has that for their retail and for their restaurants. Obviously there are tenants that live in the building, park underground, or they park in some sort of a structure parking lot as well. We also wanted that structure parking, you know, a second level being kind of cordoned off so that the apartment tenants, you know, have the benefit of kind of a more secure parking area for them and their vehicles.
Okay. I mean, so yeah, Taylor, it's interesting because I think downtown, you guys will know this, guys, but downtown Corbin District is... It's surface level parking, like street level is what that means, right? Surface level. And then they do have underground parking. Yeah. It's just it's a different feel. It's a different style and approach. And it's how you want your project to kind of look.
Yeah. I mean, I would imagine if the Corbin District had their way, they probably wouldn't have had to put in as many parking spaces as they ended up doing.
Well, I think all you guys, right? I think planning and zoning like always gives you guys forces you guys to put in more than you want.
Right. So there's probably 800 parking places at Corbin. At least that's what I remember. And there's probably Darien Commons probably is about 800. The actual train station parking is about 800, 850. And then we're going to have just shy of 400. So there's going to be plenty of parking. But probably the best way to think of New Roten Heights in general is probably urbanized suburban because of the surface parking, so people can park, you know, at street level. When you go downtown, it's a little bit more urban, and obviously you have three-story, four-story, and five-story building with respect to Corbin. So, and then you have subterranean parking as well as structured parking above ground. So, you know, it's just different. But we think of Norwood Heights as being more convenience type shopping.
I was just going to say that, you know, when we design what we're thinking for Norwood Heights and curating for the different types of tenants we're looking at, is we're 100% thinking more neighborhood business oriented, because that's what historically had been there. I mean, growing up in town, we went to Donut Inn, we would go to Heights Pizza. It used to be a place called Stoller's. It was a pretty cool place for kids to go into.
Your liquor store, your dry cleaners, exactly. Like everything you needed right there.
Exactly. And even if you look kind of what Federal's done, it's not like they're putting in the Gap. That doesn't work on that side of town.
Right.
That's not what that is for. Having multiple restaurants and eateries for people to go into, whether it's fast casual or a sit-down restaurant, or convenience shopping like getting a haircut.
Do you guys know what you're putting in for retail
restaurants? Before you ask that, can I do what? Not to do to do so much about parking. This is not a podcast about parking. Do not fret. But I just want to say one more thing. Just two more things about parking. One, is there any more parking on the site other than the garage? Like, what people, is it like you can pull up in front of a store and park still?
Sure. There is.
Yes.
There are a couple spots. There are actually multiple spots kind of in the central corridor area.
Okay.
There's actually some spots on street parking. We have to, part of our approval is to widen out the road. That's where a lot of the deliveries will take place. And then there's some other spots that are actually a little closer to Goddard that makes it easier for, you know, a quick drop off for the parents.
Okay.
Do you remember how there was always parking right outside of the Heights Pizza, and there was parking in front of what used to be the dry cleaners?
Yeah, right along Heights Road. There was pull up parking.
So
yeah.
They'll be parking, just that parking will happen again.
Cool.
So you can actually pull right up to a building and walk right in.
Okay. Once people see the plans, I think it'll make more sense. And by the way, how do you prohibit people from doing train station parking in your lot? Like, I know right now it's not as big of a problem because not as many people are commuting 5 days a week, but I think it's going to come back.
You look at the parking lots, and we're over there all the time, and you see what's going on either in downtown Darien or at the Norton Heights train station. And there's a lot of parking
out
there.
Yeah, but it wasn't. Really, I mean, there used to be a five-year line for a park. I mean, a five-year wait list just to get parking at Norton Heights train station.
It's 10 years.
Yeah. It's 10 years. Okay.
It's 10 years at Norton Heights and 10 years in Darien. The New Canaan train station is closed right now. So, and it is supposed to reopen in September, October, but every stitch of parking in Darien is used up because nobody's going to take a bus from New Canaan to Stamford.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Okay. No, I, to answer your point, that's definitely been a problem in that area of town for a while. I mean, we have the same issue downtown Darien, frankly, with one of our projects there. And the only way to really do it is to try to police it. Have somebody in the parking lot, just making sure that the people who are actually parking there are going to either go to Palmer's or go to the Wells Fargo branch or go to, you know, our development when it's open. Okay. That's the only way to try to police it.
Okay. So we've now made it abundantly clear that parking is an issue. No more parking talk. Although, may I just add, if you buy from our episode sponsor tonight, Riley Volvo Stamford, I can firmly say that nothing vehicular will ever be an issue at all down. A family-run business that stands behind every car they sell, and every interaction they have. I mean, if you have a problem or anything you need, these guys are in it for the long term with you. You can also use their omni-channel where you can seamlessly go between online and in-person shopping. So, I think we've now, Taylor, made it abundantly clear where to buy your car, where to park. And now, Taylor, let's go back to, like, you had more interesting question. I think you were asking now, like, what the retailer side, like, who's actually going to be in here? So let's go back to your question. What were you saying, Taylor?
Well, I want to hear more about the project. Like, I know that there are supposed to be two retail storefronts, four restaurants, and then we can talk about the residential part of it. Like, do you know who your tenants are going to be?
Yes, I'll take that. On the tenant side of things, it's still evolving. We are working with a liquor store. They potentially would be a crosstown move. We're pretty far along with them. And we have not signed a lease yet, so I don't want to say who it is yet.
Oh, no. Larry's is my go-to there.
So they're
Darien staple. All right, we'll talk about that off record. Upset me.
So you know that side of town will he always look if you think about it. There's always a Leary's on that side of town. There's also Glen Liquors. Right. So there was a couple different stores on that side of town.
Liquor stores have never done poorly in Darien, so that's okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
So then we'll have a liquor store. We haven't found out. We haven't decided on who the other retailer is going to be at this point. And then in terms of the restaurants, so what we have approved from the town is two full service sit down restaurants and two fast casual restaurants. Our vision for the fast casual restaurants, we'd really like to try to get another breakfast oriented place, whether it be a donut shop or a bagel shop. There's yes. always been one on that side of town. It's popular and it makes all the sense in the world being across the street from a train station.
Yes.
So that's one.
We need that.
The other thing would be for the full service sit down restaurants, we're envisioning one kind of higher end type restaurant and then one more family oriented restaurant. You know, pieces of feedback that we hear from various people all the time is we need a sports bar. We need yes. some place to go with the kids or some place that we can go watch.
Jimmy's was great for that. Remember Jimmy's?
Yeah.
Ugh.
People want more like Jimmy's with better food is what we've been told.
Yeah, totally. That's a good call.
But the way that the project sets up is right off Heights Road, we have the main kind of plaza that leads into it. It's actually a public plaza space. And it opens up right into the facility. And both full service restaurants sit on that. So it's a great way to kind of encourage people to come in, whether they be coming off the train or just in general coming into the complex and, you know, be able to sit down at either restaurant. We tried to make that as inviting as possible because from our perspective, other than maybe one or two restaurants in downtown Darien, there really isn't a restaurant right across the street from a train station in town.
We have Seymour's now. Everyone loves that.
Right. Right.
On the other side. Mm-hmm. Please don't bring more pizza. You probably are. There's so much pizza.
We're kind of done on pizza. There's two in Darien Commons. It's probably makes no sense.
I know you're Italian, but no. Well, everyone wants to have sushi, by the way, too. If I don't mention sushi, I feel like I'm going to beat over the head when I leave here. Sushi, and you can never go wrong with more Mexican, in my opinion, but.
I would agree.
Sushi's definitely some of the folks that we're talking to.
Okay.
We're also talking to some of the, you know, kind of more farm to table type restaurants as well for the higher end restaurant concepts. You know, the trick with Darien has been that Darien's never had historically kind of higher end restaurants. La Stahl opened up a couple of years ago, and that was really one of the first high end restaurants that we've had in town. And you know, Jared's done really well in town. He has a good following. His food's great, but more importantly, it's shown that people will come. And it's not just people from Darien, it's people from New Canaan or people from Greenwich or Westport. The interesting thing about town is, you know, historically people have just driven past Darien and not thought about coming out here for dinner. And downtown Darien has some good restaurants now, and there are going to be more coming with what's going on with Corbin. And like you mentioned, Seymour's earlier. I mean, there's people coming from other towns now to go to Seymour's.
Totally.
And it's kind of cool when you see these other people who are wearing a different school's logo or whatever and with the kids.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
So let's talk about the residential part of the project. So it's 65 units, luxury residential. Let's define that first of all.
Why don't you take it?
Sure.
You're on a roll.
So I'm going to have it.
He's on a roll.
So the luxury residential, really, the way we think about it and the way we actually do all of our apartments is we like to make sure that people actually truly think about it as a home. And from that perspective, we mean nice crown molding, nice appliances, higher end finishes, you know, nice tile, you know, nice countertops, etc. And have a real thought and a plan behind it, making sure that there's enough closet space, you know, that the rooms aren't too small or that there's a half bath or something like that. So that's kind of how we think about the luxury aspect of it. Now, there'll be 65 apartments, 10 of them are affordable. There'll be five, they're evenly split, five and five. Five 1-bedroom units.
And affordable means?
The, you know, state statute minimum 80% of income.
Average median income.
And do we know what that translates to?
It basically equates to about $1,500 a month in rent for a 1-bedroom, and I think it's close to $1,700 for a 2-bedroom.
And whereas the regular rents will be...
I mean, for example, on a 1-bedroom in town today, you're looking at close to $4,000, depending on the size of the unit.
Yeah.
And a 2-bedroom.
You guys will charge?
Somewhere in that context. We'll see. We'll see how the market develops. And we're a couple of years away from having to think about that totally yet. The 2 bedrooms in town, I mean, there's Corbin just listed a bunch, and they, you know, seemed like they had really good traction.
They did, yeah.
And they're north of 6,000, you know, on average. It seems like in some cases close to 7,000. So it's
31 one bedrooms, 32 bedrooms.
That's correct.
Taylor's doing math over there, so I'm talking about being successful.
And only 4 3 bedrooms.
4 3 bedroom units. Yep.
How many kids are you anticipating coming into this project?
Not that many.
No, we know that's going to be your answer, Joe.
No, the reason...
But I didn't have anything in my mouth.
No, the reason is the median age in town is 38. The average age is 38. And if you think about it, the millennials are aging out and they're moving out of cities. They were all urbanized, whether they lived in New York, London, wherever, Texas, Houston, Dallas, whatever. The idea was when they got out of school, they should live in a city. And so as they age out, whether it's through marriage and kids, or they're just at an age where, and by the way, family formation was late with that particular, with the millennials as well. And, you know, that cohort is, you know, double the size of the baby boomers. So it's a massive group of people. We started to see in the migration big time at the beginning of COVID. It has continued, and it will continue, not just for any other reason, is that people want more space, they want school systems and whatnot. Now that is against kind of the point of will there be kids there.
They just talked me into the fact there will be a ton of kids there.
There'll be very young kids, and we actually think that the three bedrooms will be different, but the one and two bedrooms will be transitioned to finding a house to buy. Yeah. So we see that today.
I was just talking to a couple brokers before I came tonight, and there's 22 active listings on the marketplace right now.
That's it?
For a house.
Wow.
There's nothing. There's no availability.
I know, that's nothing, yeah.
So when you think about that, and you think about, you know, Darien as, you know, letting, you know, opening its doors per se, we don't really have available options for young families or for even, you know, people who sell their house and say, look, I'm going to be empty nester now. Where do I want to go?
But so, if there were 100 houses, I'd be worried about like that population influx. I'm just like school.
Whether it's Corbin, whether it's Darien Commons or what we're building, it's more urban style. So it's more vertical. And if you look at the Avalon Bay project, which is just around the corner, that's garden style apartments. And even there, they don't have many kids. Okay. So the kids that we'll get, we think, are going to be probably preschool kids. And then again, I think as the kids get older, where are they going to actually play? Where are they going to be outside? Where, you know, they're, it's not going to be there. So it'll be their initial foray into Darien will be through Darien Commons and Darien Crossings. And then the next group of people, which we've seen a lot of this, is folks that are basically empty nesters. They don't want to own a house anymore, and they want to be a little bit more free-spirited and don't want to be, you know, shackled by a home. So, and there's plenty of that. So
now you'll certainly have the, you know, the kids in the high school who mom and dad, you know, are leaving and they want to leave town, but at the same time, they want to keep the kid in their senior year of high school. I know a lot of folks who go by over in Kensett, for example. And okay. That's a good segue.
Okay, let's jump in on that, Kensett. We were just talking. Do you want to go for it, Taylor?
No, it's okay. I mean, I think every developer in town building anything residential in the last, 20 years has thought the same thing. We're going to target the empty nesters because there's so many people like that that have lived here and want to downsize, and you end up with kids. Like,
but what is that, though, by the way? Kensett, it's become, though, a lot of families going there, whether divorced or new parents moving in with a bunch of kids. Are they just beating out the empty nesters, though? Because the empty nester demand is there, Taylor. I hear this all the time. I don't understand where they're going. Like, how are they?
I think a lot of empty nesters are going to Florida.
And Taylor hit the nail on the head there.
The criteria for the real empty nester, the people that are retired, is, where do my kids and grandkids live, and what's the tax situation? Yeah. So Florida's got it all
I
over.
Can
Connecticut
afford a lot of flights right. for those taxes.
Right. It's true. So, but what we do see is, and we see it in our apartments. We have apartments in town today. Is there's basically three types of tenants. There's the you know, newly married with no kids,
or a very young child. you know, exactly 2 years old or
Goddard age, to your point. Okay.
And then we see, obviously, the divorcee, which you already mentioned. And then we see the grandparents that want to be have access to their grandkids. And it may not be the primary residence. It generally, it's a second residence. And but they lease it for 12 months out of the year. And we've had, you know, it's about, I don't know, a third, I think so.
It used to be more in the empty nester category. And it was it's obviously changed a little bit with some of the kind of movements in the market over the last couple of years. But I think the other thing that's important on that, on to your point there, is some of these people that are moving into the apartments, they don't stay very long anymore. And I think that's what we've noticed in our own portfolio today, is that, you know, it used to be people would stay 3-4 years. Now it's really a 1 to 2 year, and it's a transition.
So this is interesting. And yeah, let's give you guys some credit. You have credibility. You've seen this happen, right? You've done a few projects in town. Tell us about what you have currently in existence in town and what you've seen. And, you know, go ahead.
Okay. So we have three projects in the in Roton. Next to St. John's, and we have two buildings there, and we have 8 apartments over there. We
on also, the Post Road.
Right, on the Post Road, across the street from Papa Joe's.
Yeah, it's like the Roost location?
Roost is on the first floor. Danny's is on the first floor. Double right. Exposure is there. Pure Bar is also there. And
you call them Villages on Post.
Right, right? We call them Villages on Post. And they're, at the time, the zoning was such that we couldn't have more than one bedroom. So everything was a one-bedroom apartment, and we have one studio there. We're generally always full. And it was, again, we didn't really get the millennials when we first built that project. It was really after COVID that we really started getting a lot of the millennials. And sure, the millennials, when they come in, they don't stay. It was what Joe said. They don't stay very long because they're on their way to something else. We have seen some folks that have had apartments in Stamford on the South End near the water and whatnot. And
we have an application today from one such tenant.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. And they don't want to be there for whatever reason. I don't know if it's too congested or...
So how many apartments are in that complex?
There's only 8 there. And then if you go down a quarter of a block, we have 5 down the street right next to the firehouse.
So 13 1-bedrooms.
No, there's some 2-bedrooms in that unit. So
we changed the zone. When we built the third building, we changed the zone and they allowed us to put in some 2-bedrooms.
So in those 2 complexes, how many kids do you have? Is that it? Challenging question.
No. It's thinking one.
About, we had one move out. We have one move out.
And no, they haven't moved out.
Okay,
so it's one. We have one.
Wow,
one kid.
No, I am but surprised. We have,
and, but and, we've had at least 3 or 4 pregnancies in the last 12 months, and they're moving out.
Where are they
it's
going?
A good place to move if you want to. You know.
No, but that's because I really imagined. I mean, when I was in the city, I knew families that had 2, 3, 4 kids in like a 2-bedroom apartment, and I'm thinking a 2-bedroom in the city with that many kids is less desirable. It's more expensive. It's smaller. At least here, you put those kids in the same apartment. It's less expensive. You're across the street from the train station. You can still walk to these beautiful green spaces and parks and retail.
So let's talk
why
about...
Why wouldn't you do that?
So city space, a 2-bedroom would easily be 1,000 square feet, okay? But not much more than that. And it might be 1,100 square feet.
At what price?
Oh, the city? Oh my gosh. Probably 7,000, okay. 8,000, I don't know.
So 1,000 square feet.
Right. And out here, we won't build a 2-bedroom for less than 1,500 square feet. I'm sorry, less than 1,200 square feet. Sorry about that. And our 1-bedroom, a lot of them are 1,000 square feet. And so they're big. And they have 1.5 baths, and they have fireplaces. And so we built them, you know, to be a little bit more higher end. So people expect more space when they move out of the city, and they're going to get more space, and they're going to be whatever. And that, and those complexes we're talking about, those are both equidistant to the beaches in town.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. So in the city, you're saying a 2-bedroom is 1,000 square feet and it's $7,000 or $8,000 a month. Yours will be 1200 square feet for less than that.
Yeah, probably sort of in the area of a little less than somewhere between 5,500 and 6,200.
And not to mention, you have your own parking space that does not cost you extra. You're close to the beaches, and you got top-notch schools and outdoor space.
Right.
Like, that's a slam dunk. And you walk to the train station.
If anyone from the city is hearing this, you just did a little real estate pitch
lit
there.
Lit off of that one.
Yeah. No, they like it. I don't like that. Keep it quiet.
Look, I mean, We still have the number one high school in the state academically. And by the way, when you go back to Norton Heights and Heights Crossing, you're within blocks of the middle school. And
you're walking. Right. 100% walking.
And you're pretty close to the high school.
You're walking to both of you.
I think we're silly if we think kids are not moving in here. But anyway, that's my opinion.
But I don't think that from a perspective of someone who has children in the school system, I don't think 65 apartments or 100 apartments over at Darien Commons is really going to change the school system in a material way. Now, granted, if you end up with 600-700 apartments in other locations in town with other developments, future developments or whatever, sure. Now you're starting to talk about something that's dramatically different than what the school system can maybe absorb. But I don't think Darien's there yet. Not to mention, we also have a pretty big shortage of housing in town. I mean, like I said earlier, there's only a handful of...
There's plenty of demand for the housing. There's no question. Yep. But I think we're systemically underestimating the number of kids that are moving into these.
Well, one of the things that, you know, everybody's concerned about school systems, and maybe we're building too many apartments and whatnot. But you have to understand that there was no development in Darien for apartments. There was a cap. You couldn't build a condo or an apartment for more than 1,000 square feet. And so everybody, you know, when they outgrew Darien, they went to New Canaan or they went someplace else. And so it was really about 10 years ago, Jamie Stevenson, former first selectman.
God love her.
And Monica McNally, they continued to push the notion to open it up a bit. So now we're going to end up between Corbin, Darien Crossings, and Darien Commons. I don't know, we're probably maximum 300 apartments.
Yeah.
Yeah, about that.
I mean, I hope I don't come across the wrong way. I think it's great. I think the development is great. So, and I think you're right that it's transitional most of the time, that they want to check out the community, take a couple of years, figure it out, and find a house.
Right.
You know, get to know where they want to live. That makes sense. Makes a ton of sense.
But it's that one situation, like you were mentioning, where you have a two-bedroom unit and maybe there's four kids living in it.
Right.
At the same time, when they're making their application, we won't let a family of six move into a two-bedroom. That doesn't make sense. So
you can actually say no?
Yeah.
Isn't that a safety problem?
They have to disclose the people that are living there, and there's occupancy that the town allows and the state allows, actually. So
what's the maximum occupancy for a two-bedroom?
I believe it's five people. I have to check that,
so
but I believe it's
five.
Three
kids is okay, but four is not. If you get pregnant, are you getting kicked out? I think we've beaten this topic to death.
Yeah, no, they say
let's shift gears.
I think it's a good. You asked about their experience. And I think we haven't gotten into that yet. Do you mind if we go on their experience?
No, I'd like to do that.
Because you guys have been when people think about who's developing, Darien. What do you call Heights? Darien Heights?
Heights Crossing.
Heights Crossing. Gosh, there's so many names going on. Darien Commons, Heights Crossing. You're developing this site over by Palmer's. People are wondering, who are these developers? What to expect from you guys? And this is not your first rodeo. You guys have done a ton of projects in town. You've been in town for a long time. You both live here. It's quite a luxury to have developers who live and work in the same town. Sorry, am I too loud, Taylor? I get excited.
Go ahead.
I think we've gotten spoiled that with David as well, but this is not a common thing to have developers. It's usually developers come in, they build a bunch of stuff, and they take off. So I think your experience you bring here is unique. So what is your experience? How long have you been here?
I think you hit the nail on the head with the comment of, you have a developer who doesn't live in the area, and they come in from New York City or some other, big pocketed person that comes in and, they put together something that essentially they don't care about. They want to lease it, they want to rent it, and they want to maybe sell it. It's an economical decision for them, and that's
about it.
It's a
trade. Right.
Yeah.
And they're more interested in density, putting as much on the land as they could possibly do.
Of course.
They're less concerned about the architectural facets of it.
There was a well-publicized recent development that didn't make it through, but they were trying to overdevelop a half an acre in town, and that just doesn't make sense. This potential developer, for whatever they were trying to do, they were trying to get a lot of density, and it just doesn't make sense. Obviously, they were trying to think about it from a monetary perspective, and that's fine. We don't look at it from that perspective. Yes, of course, economics are part of our decision process. We try to manage to that. At the same time, we're also managing to our reputation and making sure that we have a high-end product that not just our residential tenants like, but that also is really a popular and positive experience for the retail tenants, because the retailers are a pretty important point for bringing in customers to these complexes.
Yeah, we need commerce. It's really important. It's part of the whole experience of living in town. But what we have historically done is we look for properties that are blighted. We look for properties that are in massive need of renovation. We already talked about the two properties that were Danny's is and Roost and whatnot.
And Road those, Heights and Post
and
Road.
Right. Okay. And those properties were not particularly interesting.
Yeah, on your website, it says, "We go where no other developers go." Right. That is a bold statement. Like, right. Why would you choose that path? What makes you so confident?
I would do the Star Trek side.
I think our marketing company got a little bit excited. But anyway, so you know, and then we had, you know, if you think about it, we bought the old Darien Theater, which, you know, nobody was going to anymore.
Darien Playhouse, right where Cafe Nero is.
Exactly.
Kind of. It's been a huge success.
Right. And we opened up the backside of that. And then if you think about where...
So you opened it up and La Taqueria is there now. You got exactly. the lighting store. Lighting,
exactly.
Yeah. You got the hairdresser.
There. Right. And then if you, you know, just you know, that was a 1925 building. And so we were able to match the red brick, and we carried the red brick all the way through. It was kind of a fun project because whether you're an apartment in there or you're a retailer in there on the new addition, everybody has a red brick wall interior space.
Nice.
And so so the apartments are very lofty. I mean, they have 11.5-foot ceilings, and they have a red brick wall someplace. In the unit, whether it's in a bedroom or in a living room or whatever. And it was, you know, it was a classic case where nobody was going to the theater anymore because it was, candidly, it was just kind of a dump.
Well, my family misses that movie theater, but I will say, I think you did a beautiful job.
Yeah, there's a lot of what we try to focus on are buildings that may have some functional obsolescence with them. And that happens in real estate a lot. For example, bank branches.
Oh, sure.
The bank branches are not all that highly trafficked anymore. Everyone does their stuff on their phone, right? I mean, you look at your iPhone and you go. You know, the other good example is, you know, cleaners. You know, cleaners don't need the amount of square footage that they used to need because that's where they did all the laundry and they did everything else. Now they send everything out. So they just need a location where they can drop off a shirt or a pair of trousers or something like that.
So we had another building, which was just east of Rory's, which was used to be called the old sewing room and was dilapidated.
Oh, yes.
It was tired. It was beat up.
So is that where Orange Theory is now?
That's where Orange Theory is. And we completely redid that building.
Only a few people will know how bad that site was.
It was pretty bad.
It was very bad.
Yeah. When you went in there, you kind of wanted to take a shower after you left. It was pretty bad. And so we did that. Recently, I guess in roughly September last year, we bought an office building in town, which used to be the old Exxon Chemical headquarters. It's literally one block to the train station. It was formerly a Class A office building, not particularly tall because you don't have height in Darien, and about a block off of I-95. And we reskinned the building, meaning we re-glassed the entire exterior of the building, put in new window separators, mullions. You know, we redid the lobbies, the elevator cabs, the common hallways and whatnot, parking garage, the parking lots, re-landscaped.
This is Old Kings Highway.
Yeah, 9 Old Kings Highway.
See, how come you guys aren't doing more office building, though? I always wondered this, too, with like your car. Like,
I was going to ask about that with functional obsolescence.
Office is a weird place to be these days,
yeah,
right?
Rough.
I mean, you know, the media has really done a fantastic job of highlighting how challenging it is, especially in some of the bigger cities. Out in Connecticut, it's probably a little bit different because it's not, obviously you're not talking about a skyscraper with a large office footprint and everything else. But at the same time, you do have vacancy. You know, Greenwich is maybe the polar opposite of that. It seems like Greenwich, you can't touch office. It's extremely expensive. Mm. There are very low vacancy rates. Darien's a little bit different because it's not where a lot of the quote unquote hedge funds would necessarily go to historically. And I think that's starting to change a little bit because of the town really gentrifying itself with the new developments and with offering more commerce. You know, one of the things that we hear from potential tenants, office tenants, is, you know, what we really like about your building or just what's going on in Darien in general is we can walk someplace for lunch.
Yeah.
And the people want to be able to get out of their office and go walk around to find a place to eat. And Darien has that now. Historically, You had an Uncle's Deli, you had the Sugar Bowl, you didn't really have a ton of options. You had 1020 Post, but for the most part, there wasn't a ton of options. Now there's a lot more options and there's more coming. And I think that's what gets people excited.
Okay, but if someone listening to this might say, like, why aren't you bringing office buildings to other areas where you're doing apartments? If we're talking about density is a high concern.
We think Neroten Heights needs an office building for sure.
Neroten Heights, down where Palmer's is right now.
Right.
So you're thinking about adding that too.
Well, we don't really have the space for it, but we keep looking around in that area. There definitely should be an office building right across from the train station. Why not? I mean, in our existing, this building, 9 Old Kings Highway South, 20% of the people in that building reverse commute from the city. So the younger folks are taking the train. We also get people that are further up the line, whether they're in Fairfield or Milford or whatever, that they commute vis-a-vis train by, rail. Because it's really like being on 42nd Street and right next to Grand Central Station. It's that close.
Right.
So
yeah, it's actually kind of interesting because one of the other things that we're seeing right now, and I think this actually will continue, is a lot of people do not want to be in Stamford, whether that's apartments or for office.
Interesting.
And I think part of the, I don't really understand the apartment quite as much. Maybe it's just a density issue or that maybe people age out of that. But I think from an office standpoint, it's, yes, there's plenty of beautiful buildings, especially right near the train. There's some great buildings with good amenities. But people really hate having to get on 95 and sit in an hour-long traffic from Westport to Stamford. And that's killing people. And the commute, is something that people are saying, well, I live in Connecticut and I've got a 45-minute to an hour-long commute. It just makes no sense.
Yeah.
So we're starting to see some of that influx of call it potential tenants.
That was a surprise for us. We never expected that. We always thought that there would be the New York-based firm that wanted a representative office in the suburbs, and they would maybe pick Darien because it's kind of centrally located between a bunch of different towns, and it's actually, we're seeing a lot of Stamford reverse inquiry.
Interesting. So you guys have only been, is it the V20 group?
Mm-hmm.
Since 2014, correct?
Correct.
What was before that?
John, why do you have a smirk on your face? Why are you laughing? What's good?
well, we're both ex-finance Wall Street folks. The first development, I was just kind of looking for something to do and
which keep was myself. Your, what was that?
That was where Roost is and right
there. That's like how Genevieve got started, right?
He was
Wall Street. That's what he told me.
Yeah, that's where I met David. Is when he was at. He actually worked for Bankers Trust, which became Deutsche Bank, and then he went on to Credit Suisse, and then he started his own business.
What did you guys do in Wall Street?
Well, I ran the global real estate finance business for Deutsche Bank for about 13 years, and based in the city versus London, but we had people scattered all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also, in other parts of the world, we actually invested in properties, mostly in the emerging markets. And so it wasn't a leap of faith to actually do some development, but I just thought I was doing it as a part-time thing. And then one day...
it's my weekend hobby.
One day my son came to me and he said, I'm quitting my job. And,
your son here.
Yeah,
sitting.
Joe, what were you doing?
I was in the mortgage business as well. And I was a mortgage credit trader and kind of managing various different trading desks on Wall Street and a couple different shops. And after about 20 years, it's tough sitting on a trading desk. It gets old. It's repetitive. And it's, you want to do something more and more entrepreneurial. And, so that's when I came to my dad and said, guess what? We're going into business together. And I looked at me like, what are we doing?
Guess what?
So Joe's in the business and recruited me is what I like. That's why the smile.
Oh, I like that. That's cool.
That's really funny.
That's a good story. Well, speaking of controversy, and I don't know if you'll address this or not, but I've heard there have been protests about this project. The Heights crossing. Is that true?
Well, it's interesting. We all waited 8 years plus. Okay.
I'm talking 20. Why did it take so long?
Well, the family had been working on it for at least 8 years. Okay.
The Palmer family.
The Palmer family. Mm-hmm. And they were the first to actually take advantage, thinking that they had land, and the first ones to actually conceptualize it. There was a lot of talk about Corbin and what David was doing, but David didn't. It took him a long time to finish all the assemblage. He had a lot of properties he still needed to buy and whatnot, where it was different for the Palmer family because they already owned the land. Mm-hmm. So they didn't have to go through any of that. And so when we first got involved, it was about 4 years ago. And it was actually exactly 4 years ago. And they wanted to do a partnership. But they have a very large extended family. And over time, they basically said, look, we're just going to sell it. Okay. So I want to give you a little bit of that history, but there was an approval granted for them in 2017 to build what effectively is pretty much what we're building. There's some differences, mostly architectural differences, but for the most part, it's not that different of a plan.
The density didn't really change all that drastically. If anything, the retail went down. There's a couple more apartments, but for the most part, it's a very, very similar plan to what was approved.
All right. And so then it was approved again in 2019 with some modifications, and then it was again approved when we were involved in early 2022. So to say that everybody wanted this done. We certainly wanted it done. We shop at Palmer's, okay? And we know the area. And all of a sudden, there was a couple neighbors that basically were, I think they got concerned about I'll call it the hill, and the removal of the trees. The trees have to be removed in order for us to build the retaining wall, et cetera, et cetera.
The back edge of the property.
The back end of the property. There were four neighbors involved in that. And so, and we're perfectly willing to re-landscape and what we'll plant there will look a heck of a lot better than what was there before. We have the before pictures and we know what it looked like. And some people, you know, they had a fence line and, you know, behind the fence is where they threw their, you know, their leaves from the winter and some of their brush, you know, when they cleaned up, you know, their properties on an annual basis.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's going to be a completely more tailored look.
But that explains why I could see why people were upset, because I drove by there one day and I kind of know what's going on. And I saw you guys had like completely removed tree after tree. And I was like, what is going on here? Like, I don't remember. But so I could see how someone not understanding the scope of how to safely build this.
Yeah, I think that's the fact you will. So what you just said is actually really important is it's a safely build this. And I think that's one thing that, you know, the general public doesn't realize is, yeah, we have to take out trees and we're going to replant those trees with, you know, obviously with new trees, but you have to take out the trees because in order to ensure that the hillside doesn't, you know, fall over, for lack of a better word, and we structurally support it, which we're going to do. And that's part of our plan. You have to remove that existing tree system and those roots. And then not to mention the actual entrance for the parking garage goes into that hill. So that actually acts as part of the retaining wall that we have to build.
There'll be a retaining wall all the way, almost the entire length. There'll be different sizes to it. As you get closer to the store, the height of the retaining wall drops. It's the other thing that's different about this project is that when you look at Darien Commons and you look from West Avenue, look back at the buildings from across the street, it's pretty well landscaped, okay?
Yeah, it looks nice.
Right. And so one of the things that's happening with folks that live on West Avenue is they're not going to be looking into somebody else's apartment. They're sit substantially higher. They'll be looking at rooftops.
Oh, okay.
So they're going to be looking at rooftops, and when we re-landscape, we'll probably be putting in a lot of green giants, which will grow to 30, 40 feet tall, and it'll provide us, you know, a fair amount of privacy that will restore what they had before. So,
okay.
And then in that same vein, what about the intersection at Hollow Tree and?
So part of our approval West. Is that we have to, I mentioned it earlier, we're going to be widening the street on Heights Road. And then also there's some signal modifications that have to take place. That's a little above my pay grade, but basically it's the traffic, it's a substantial amount of money that we have to invest into the traffic signals to make sure that the synchronization of the signal lights and such.
Who's making you make that investment?
It's part of the approval.
Our planning and zoning is doing that?
Part of the planning and zoning.
Right. It goes to the Department of Public Works. I think that's fantastic. And
I hope they're a lot more money
than you can imagine.
Yeah, I hope they are giving you a colonoscopy as far as that goes, because I am so stressed about the traffic in town, especially on that side of town. So you guys are really getting... So,
and there was a little bit of, when we were going through the approval process as well, you know, a lot of folks came out and said, you know, they were concerned about the traffic volumes, especially during the, I'll call it the 7:30 to 8:00 time period. Not just from the train, but also because of the Middlesex school and the traffic of, you know, the kids and such.
Right. Is there going to be like a left turn lane added like there was at Narroton and West?
There is a widening of the road. I think there's a left and a right turn as you go towards Hollow Tree. Additionally, you know, the thing that people were initially thinking was, you know, well, what about Goddard? If it's one time period, do the kids get dropped off at 7:57, the same time as the school?
Right.
And Goddard actually is a little bit of a different model. It's not you come in and drop your kid off at a certain time. They actually have a rolling admission. So essentially, if the mother or father or, you know, drop the kid off at 8:15 one day and 9:00 the next day, it doesn't really matter. There's not one time. So that actually is a little bit of a different business model than what I think a lot of folks were thinking.
So in the middle school, the kids have to be in their seat by 10 of 8:00 in the morning. So with this rolling drop off and rolling pickup over a 2-hour period, with 150 kids, and by the way, there's siblings involved in the school as well. We're figuring that it's really 100 families. It would be that much duplication with the kids. So it's just not that. We did time and motion studies using Westport and we had traffic engineers sitting in the parking lot in Westport to figure out. And most of it is like 7 cars every 15 minutes.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, this is, you talked about the other property that came up that acre zone, the other side of town, or where you mentioned it, and that they had... I can't remember what you had said about it, but like they were trying to maximum density.
Half an acre with 22 apartments.
So one of the things, I think I know what project you're talking about there. And one of the issues that they didn't think about, that whole drop off and the whole, like, you know, delivery. When you have an apartment complex, you got deliveries, and especially with like young parents that are working, they have a lot of grocery deliveries. I'm not to talk about, you know, their regular amenities and like, you know, Amazon packages. Like you need to think that through.
I mean, I think, look, one of the things that you mentioned earlier that makes, you know, us or Genovese or, you know, a local developer a little bit different than called a big New York City or a big city developer, is we take a step back when we're planning this stuff and we think about it from the perspective of how would we feel about it? How would our wives feel about it? You know, going in, going out, you know, how does it work within the local confines? And, you know, you think about it a little bit more personally because you obviously live here or you live locally. And that's one of the things that's a little bit different. And there's a lot more planning that goes into it. I think by the time it actually makes its way to you, Liz, when we're at ARB, we've had, gosh, maybe 100 hours of meetings for design. It's a lot. And then it makes its way to the next.
You both live in town?
Yes.
Yeah, you're going to hear about it when you get home if it's not good, right? That's good. That's a good true thing.
Yeah, if their wife doesn't like traffic, like, yeah. It took me 30 minutes to get to school.
This is your fault. You will fix it.
I have a kid in Middlesex, and yeah, I will definitely hear about that.
That's a good thing.
That's hysterical.
Do you have any green space built into this project?
Yeah, there is the part of the way that we are actually, the plan had come together was there's about 10,000 square feet of what they call public plaza. That's between the restaurant spaces that I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. And then it actually extends towards the back, actually in the area of the parking structure as well.
Nice.
By the way, are the Palmers still part of the...
No.
No. So you bought them out?
Correct.
So, but you have you share the parking lot. They still own the grocery store, but you bought the property.
They own the grocery store. We own the parking lot, and there's a shared parking arrangement with them where, you know, they can their clientele.
We're not talking about parking anymore. We promised. Remember?
Yeah, but I'm just saying.
Okay, but you guys. Okay. So,
yeah.
Okay, got it. And then can we talk about the rest of their projects just real quickly? So you guys, we talked about the ones on Post Road. You also guys mentioned the one, the old Playhouse building, mm-hmm. which new people won't know as much. Old people, definitely, older people in town will definitely know that.
Mm-hmm.
Which
you, by the Darien Sport Shop.
By the Darien Sport Shop. And talk about like having local, you know, local developers. You guys, you guys retained that building in a way that a new developer to come in and just wreck that building. But it was historical. They're like, it was amazing inside, and you guys kept it and you kept the brick throughout. I commend you on that. The ARB saw them. I'm like, from an architectural standpoint, like, I'm,
you won Liz's heart with
I know
that.
I'm so excited. I know I could talk about that for a full episode. And then you also it pains Taylor. She's like snoozing when we talk planning and zoning. And then you did the Orange Theory one up the street. But you guys sold that one. So my other question is, how many of your buildings do you retain your own ownership, and how many do you plan to sell? Or?
So we don't really look at things from a perspective of retain and for long-term or short-term. It's the business plan is always evolving. And we think about things from a perspective of, is it something that we can see ourselves wanting to own? Is there something that, you know, with the property that is strategically important? Obviously, being across the street from a train station, yeah, that's strategically important. That's great real estate. You're not recreating that dirt.
True enough.
You know, and then the one that we sold in town, where Orange Theory is, we kind of just looked at the building. We said, look, we have good tenants in there. That was unfortunately before Pasta Vita. And we kind of looked at it. And we just looked at each other. And we said, look, we can't do anything more for this building. There's, you know, at this point we've kind of achieved what we were looking to achieve. We achieved the business plan. Let's just sell it and move on. Okay. We did the same thing with a building in Norwalk that we built. It was a warehouse. And we ended up selling it to some folks that, basically they put in some self storage. So for them, what we built was a 45,000 square foot building. They looked at it like they could put multiple floors in there because it had high ceiling heights. Mm. And they thought they could have like 100,000 square feet of storage space. So different business model for them versus what we were thinking. And then we have a pretty large development in Stanford, which is all warehouse space.
So you're done in Darien for right now, except for the old Gold Kings Highway office building, which you're kind of wrapping up.
Right.
But do you have any new?
What we did is, when we sold the Orange Theory building, we reinvested into the office building. That was exactly what we did. We're still looking around. There's less and less blight to pick from in Darien.
Well, Thorndale Circle is going to go on sale soon behind Nielsen's. That's a huge one. And
It's been on the market for about a year. Nobody really knows what you can get there in terms of the number of apartments. Everybody keeps looking at it as apartments.
Ultimately, I think, you know, the family is going to figure out what's best for them. But from, you know, from our perspective, that's another piece of dirt that kind of unique, right? It's almost 12 acres.
You know, we're talking about Taylor, right? Behind Nielsen.
Thorndale, yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
It's behind Nielsen's and behind the Range Rover Jaguar dealership.
What's in there now? I mean, I think I go there for medical appointments, but is that what we're talking about?
Yes. There's Stanford Health is in there. Yeah. And then there's 108,000 square feet of two or three different office buildings in there.
Are they vacant?
No, there are people in there, but you go for health and whatnot, that's probably their family's planning on keeping that building, which is directly behind the flower shop.
Right? Yep.
So that's all master leased by Stanford Hospital.
Interesting.
It's where our MRI, MRI we have in town.
Exactly.
Is there,
yeah. Right? Well, it'll be interesting to see, as you were speaking to earlier, like how the trends evolve. I mean, obviously nothing is static forever, and office space is particularly out of fashion since COVID because everyone learned how to work from home and loves that. But guess what? When you have those four kids in the 2-bedroom apartment that you guys are leasing, you're going to want to get out of there and go work somewhere else. So maybe office space will come back. I don't know.
I think to your point about office space, you know, the thing that's different about office is as you look at the different real estate asset classes, office is the most challenging from an ownership perspective. And by that, I mean that there's always something that you need to invest money in. You always have to try to, for example, common quarters. You always want to make sure your common quarters are nice, or your bathrooms are nice. You're always thinking about, well, how do you attract tenants or keep your tenants in that building? Not that you don't do that with an apartment, but it's a lot less wear and tear on the apartment as opposed to someone who just works there. It's just a little bit of a different animal than the rest of the real estate, commercial real estate area.
John, I've got 5 words for you here.
Okay. Five words. Okay.
Mini golf, dog, park, bar. Boom. Okay, end on that. No, I'm kidding. Solve all your problems right there. Bring that to me. We'll talk offline. I'll be your operator. Mini golf, dog, park, bar. High-end bar. We got that.
Oh my gosh. Well, we should wrap it up. I would love to just know before we close, like, you know, what are your greatest hopes for this project and what are your greatest concerns about this project?
I'll let you start.
We're hoping to basically be able to differentiate what we built versus what everybody else has built in town. Not that we're, you know, that everybody's, you know, I think people are building some really, really nice things. But we would like to basically believe that at least some of what we built is going to be a little bit different. And it's a sort of a competitive world. So I would say that we would like to, we would hope that people would say, wow, this project is really different. It's first of all, smaller than all the other two that are going on at the same time.
I mean, I think to that point, we're not big in the limelight type people. We tend to take a step back, and we don't really love being out in the publicity side of things.
It was impossible even to get you on this. You guys are like so reticent, like please.
Whether it's social media or whatever, we don't like being out there like that. We prefer to let the buildings and the tenants and the quality of the work and frankly the quality of the tenants show for us. We want it to be a better experience for our tenants. We're more focused on that aspect of things. So that's kind of what to take off on your point. We really want to build a high end product, and that's kind of where we focus our attention. I think the biggest concerns are, you know, we touched on it earlier. It's you know, a little bit about traffic, and frankly, it's also about, you know, making sure that you have the right tenants. You know, you bring in a restaurant. You bring in a restaurant, they're going to sign a 10-year lease. You're in bed with that person for 10 years. If they're not a good operator, or if they make a mistake, it reflects poorly on you too. And that's one of the things as a developer, you have to be really thoughtful about. You're trying to mitigate your risk and manage your reputation. But ultimately, you can't manage something that, you know, someone else is running as an operator. And it's different. It's just a little bit different.
So one last thought on Norton Heights is we would like to, and we've talked to the folks from Federal Realty and from Palmer's, and we'll probably talk to some other tenants in the area. We want to market Norton Heights as part of Darien, the same way Old Greenwich is to Greenwich. And some people don't even know that. Some people think Norton Heights is part of Stamford. Okay, some people know that it's part of Darien. But as I said earlier, there's going to be a plethora of restaurants. There's going to be some things that are there that are kind of neat and unique. And we want to get people not from just from Darien, but from some of the surrounding towns to also support it.
I like that.
Well, I want to personally thank you for going where no other developers have gone before and for, you know, taking this project that has been blighted for so long and really running with it and doing it in such a responsible way, and for coming and talking to us about it. I know it wasn't easy for you, but thank you for taking the leap of faith, and I hope we made it enjoyable for you.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate you having us here.
Thank you. Yeah, such
a pleasure. We enjoyed getting to know you. Thanks for coming.
Thank you again to John and Joe of Acaro for being here tonight. And if you guys want to look at their website or, you know, look into these guys a little bit more, they are v20group.com. Pretty easy, v20group.com. And if you haven't had a chance to listen, go back and check out our episodes on the other two large developments that have happening here in town. The one is with Patrick McMahon and Stuart Beal of Federal Realty. Great guys. And then David Genovese from Baywater Properties, who we all know and love. And then make sure to follow us so you can receive updates on new episodes. Also, one last note, upcoming event, the Chamber Jam is October 14th at the Garden Center on the Post Road. If you guys haven't been, check it out. It's one of the awesomest parties in town. It's a full town party. They've got great food vendors. I'm not here. They didn't ask me to plug it. I'm just telling you because Taylor and I went last year. We're going to go again this year. It's just a really cool event. So October 14th, look into it. It's with the Darien Chamber sells tickets.
I love you use the word awesomest.
It's awesome. I know. I'm making up my own words for the Chamber. Thanks.
It is pretty good.
Thanks for listening.